And welcome back on Husker Radio, KODY, 1240 AM, 106.1 FM, both proud members of the Husker Radio Group. It's Tristan Winder. Please sit down with Ward 2 North Platte City Councilman Ty Lucas. Councilman Lucas, it's been a little while. How are you, sir?
Great. It's great to be back in the studio. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, unfortunately, not unfortunately that Ty's running for re-election, but with the re-election campaign, leaves a little bit of restriction, so we've not had Councilman Lucas in the studio for a little while, but if my colleagues in Ward 2 decide to re-elect Councilman Lucas, we look forward to welcoming him back in monthly for updates.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I'll be doing a little campaigning as the race comes up too, so you guys will see me out in the media. So.
Now, we'll be hearing a little bit about that. And this is the first time, Councilman Lucas, we've had you in the studio since the big appointment of District 42 Senator Mike Jacobson, a guy that you've worked with for, is it almost 20 years now, 10 years?
Actually, a little over 20 years.
Is it over 20?
Yep. I moved back to North Platte 20 years ago this May, so 20 years and 1 month ago. And I can remember that because my oldest son was a baby at that point in time, and he's rapidly approaching his 21st birthday here, so I can kind of keep a benchmark on that. So yes, I've had the pleasure of working with Mike for a little over 20 years.
And you've known Mike forever, pretty much, too, as he and your father are founding members or first appointees of the Community of North Platte Redevelopment Authority, I believe.
They are. My dad served with Mike for many years on the CRA. Now, that occurred while I was living in Florida and Idaho, and so I actually met Mike earlier the year that I moved back here, so I didn't know him prior because I had departed from North Platte during the time he came. But yeah, I've spent 20 years working very, very closely with him on a daily basis.
How has the environment changed at the bank since the senator has been in the office? Obviously, it's probably a little bit more back to normal now that the session's not in swing, but my goodness, we dropped Senator Jacobson in the middle of war, it seemed like.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tremendous whirlwind for him, and he's done a great job of managing all that. I mean, fortunately, we have so much strength and experience in our team at the bank that we're very well established for him to take on that kind of appointment. But he's been all in as our senator. Now, he's still doing his job as the CEO of our bank. I think he's working long hours and working hard, and he's out there representing the bank and doing his senator job all at the same time. So I think more than anything, he's just busier. We try to provide him support on the things we can. We try to make sure things are covered at the bank. But he's definitely working more hours than I think he was before the appointment. Now, that's not indicating he wasn't working sufficient hours prior.
But he has a new quote-unquote part-time job that I don't know how part-time the state senator gig really is.
But. Yeah. Well, and he and I always talk, you know, working in the political arena, first of all, it's very humbling because you realize how many people disagree with you on things. And so there's a humbling aspect of that I've found in my time at the city council. And when you work in an organization like ours, there's going to be things we disagree on all the time, but we're kind of all rowing the boat the same direction.
Sure.
Well, when you're working in the political arena, you have people that have very passionate views about many, many different issues that some are going to disagree with you. And I would tell you, I've learned a tremendous amount about that. And you learn a lot about yourself working in a political office because you are constantly working with people that agree with you, constantly working with people that somewhat agree with you, and then some that disagree with you. And it's just different than our work environment. But I think he's enjoying that. And I also think he's learning a lot from it, too.
Thankfully, though, our city council chambers aren't quite as divisive as the legislative chambers.
No. Sometimes we're not in agreement on things, but no, it's definitely a more constructive environment that's here for the good of North Platte.
Now, Councilman Lucas, you're coming to your conclusion on your first term as a Ward 2 representative, but in the interesting turns that elections and governments can sometimes kind of take, you already find yourself in a senior role in a lot of ways around the council chamber. You and Councilman Reeker were freshman members just a few short years ago, and now you find yourselves as some senior members.
Yeah, we've joked about that once or twice, that we went from our freshman year to our junior year pretty quick. and because we've had so much change. Now, fortunately, we have Council President Nisley, Jim Nisley, with us. And, you know, he's got tremendous experience. So does Councilman Carmen. And so fortunately, even though Ed and I's seniority jumped up fairly quickly. We still have council members that have a lot more experience than we do there.
And great council members, too, that have experience in business, in government as well, like Councilman Bowles, your Ward 2 counterpart, that also, much like yourself, has experience with the City of North Platte and the Planning Commission side of things as well.
Yeah, Pete was the chair of the Planning Commission for a number of years, and Pete Vols truly understands planning and zoning inside and out as well as anybody in the community does. And so, yeah, that experience that we had on the Planning Commission was so, so important. And so, you know, maybe, who knows what's in your future there, Tristan, because you're getting that experience now on the Planning Commission. Yeah,
I'll be staying there for a number of years.
it's a wonderful experience, and it's extremely important because I know as a council member, when that recommendation comes across from the Planning Commission, that's a big deal. If mm-hmm. If I see a recommendation that comes from the Planning Commission, the Quality Growth Review Committee, or the I'm trying to think, I'm a little blank right now.
The CRA.
Or the CRA. The yeah. CRA is what I was reaching for there. The CRA. I mean, I realize those are committees that are appointed people based on their expertise, their place in the community, that are scrubbing these items inside and out and making a recommendation, taking public feedback. And so those recommendations are great as a council member because, you know, we're looking at so many issues. Sometimes we just don't have the hours you would like to have on every issue. And so those recommendations become extremely important.
And one of the reasons that I had invited Councilman Lucas to come in the studio was to talk a little bit about the zoning changes that the City of North Platte has made as of last Tuesday with the final approval on some of these ordinances that are going to be changed. This is great work that was done by our great planning and zoning administrator, Judy Clark. I really like the process that she's brought to the Planning Commission, to the council, and to the city, Ty, and making it baby steps and not just one big bite to chew off.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have Judy and her experience and knowledge in that role at the city, and she does a great job. And this is a monumental task. I mean, trying to change zoning is a huge deal because if you think about it, everybody is playing by a set of rules today, and we've had long-established zoning ordinances. And then all of a sudden to come in and do a massive modernization is extremely, extremely difficult and can be extremely controversial. And so like you said, the approach that we all recognize that our zoning needs modernized. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a perfect example of that. One of the very exciting changes that we have with our zoning modernization is to make it much easier to do a townhouse. Now, what a townhouse is a individual lot that somebody can own that shares a common wall. So a lot like our downtown buildings are mm-hmm. in downtown North Platte, or there's some various townhome type, condominium type structures in town. But a little definition here is a duplex is one structure that's all owned on one parcel of land, and a townhome is a lot that shares a common wall. So like, for example, you and I could have a townhome where you owned one half and I owned the other half and we shared a wall. And then a condominium is a different animal because a condominium is where you basically own the inside of your structure, but you collectively in association own the grounds and the outside. And so an example of one of the modernizations that was made in the zoning change was to make it much easier for somebody to construct a townhome. Well, a townhome can be built a little bit cheaper than a single family home. So now let's say I was somebody who needed a certain amount of bedrooms or square footage, I would be able to possibly buy a townhome once we see more construction of that nature in town because of this new zoning modernization made that a lot easier.
And it's been a process, too, that you and Councilman Bowles on the council have been very, I would say, hands-on involved in and in helping with the education of some other other city council members that don't have the knowledge or the experience of planning and zoning that you and Pete have.
Well, we try to help out. You know, Pete is an insurance professional and I work in banking, and both of those areas tie into all of this. So we both have a little bit of a different view from our professions that then we try to bring in to be helpful at the council level. A good example of that was we were trying to make sure in our ordinances that it was very clear the difference between a manufactured and a modular and a stick-built home. And sometimes that definition varies, and sometimes it different people see things different ways.
So it's
very tricky. So we spent a lot of time just trying to make sure that we were accurate and consistent and we were all on the same page. And so, yeah, it's easier for me to work on that stuff because I work with it some in my professional life. And so it's easier for me to do that. Just like it is Mr. Carmen, who has the law enforcement background. He has that great background to bring to the mix. And Mr. Nisley has the legal background. And then, of course, I'm so thankful Brad Garrick has the tremendous background with technology and data analysis and all that. So I think part of a great city council is people bringing their various backgrounds and levels of expertise, and we try to use it all together.
I couldn't agree more. Again, we're blessed to have Ward 2 North Platte City Councilman Ty Lucas joining us here on KODY. And Councilman Lucas, with the recent development of some wonderful homes in the 4th Ward here in the state of North Platte, we've had three letters that provide a little bit of controversy to our community come back up again with TIF, tax increment financing. And part of the reason, too, I invited Councilman Lucas to come in the studio was to explain to us what TIF is, because it has controversy, it has some strong feelings when you hear those three letters and you hear that abbreviation. And Councilman Lucas, there's been numerous individuals of strong representation throughout the entire state that have told me that you're one of the individuals that understands tax increment financing better than a lot of individuals throughout the state, and understands and can explain it perhaps better than anybody else throughout our great state as well. And I would have to echo that also.
Well, I've been working on this topic for years, both in my time, because there was a time when I was on the chamber board and on the executive committee and then the chairman of the board, and then also the planning commission, and then now the city council. So I've got years of working in this in public service. Of course, working with Mike and knowing my father, who are involved with the CRA, it's obviously a big part of what the CRA has been organized to do. So this is something I've been working on for years. And I would also tell you that housing is tremendously important to me, both in our business at the bank, in the health of the communities, but also, I believe, from a public service standpoint, that it's the most valuable thing I can spend my time on for the communities that we live in. And so I have been very engaged in housing, you know, ever since I moved back to Nebraska. Now, when I was working in Idaho before I moved back here 20 years ago, I was in Boise and banking at a time where the housing rush was going on. So I saw a lot of housing development during that time. But TIF, we got to remember, TIF is a three-letter word, not a four-letter word, and I always remind people of that around here, because it's a tremendous tool. And so, yeah, let's just walk real simply how it works, and then let's overlay that to housing and this housing project up north, if you'd like, and stop me along the way so I don't go on too long a ramble, Tristan, here. But the beauty of TIF is creating something out of nothing, and Gary Pearson mentioned that over and over again at the council meeting. And that's the idea. And the second thing to remember is it's a financing tool. Mm-hmm. That's what TIF is. So really how it works, in the state of Nebraska, there was a constitutional amendment done many years ago that allowed you to take taxes and rebate them back to a bondholder to fix blight and substandard areas. And so a community under its local control can designate areas of their community to be blight and substandard. Now, that is a wider definition than you realize. And sure, there is a lot of information you can get to out there that shows what the criteria of blight and substandard is. To give you an example, a area that has just been vacant for a long period of time can be one of the criteria that helps determine if a property is blight and substandard. So it isn't just an old rundown or burned down structure that you would imagine when you think of blight and substandard. It can also include things like if there was an irrigation ditch that needed filled in or moved, or if it was a piece of ground that, you know, didn't have good access or something. There can be very different ways that that an area is seen as underdeveloped and then therefore can qualify. And so the first step
and I think, Councilman Lucas, a great example of this too is sustainable beef. They're using tax increment financing to raise the ground level of sustainable beef to prevent any flooding and for that project as well, I believe.
That's a perfect example. That is ground that would be very challenging to develop without assistance. Now, and there can be all sorts of reasons for that. Like Menards is one that I've heard people poke at over time, and they say, well, Menards would have come without that, and that area wasn't blighted. Well, that area was a big stretch from where our town's infrastructure was, and mm-hmm. you had to have infrastructure pulled all the way out to that area. The big turning lanes needed to be added. I mean, there was significant public infrastructure that had to be included to get Menards in that site.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can look at it lots of different ways. And so the first step is that people that the town has to declare the area blight and substandard to qualify for TIF. And in a town the size of North Platte, up to 35% of our town can be eligible for that designation. That's why when we annexed the airport, it was a big deal on this topic, because that acreage was pretty large and it grew the size of our town, which then grows the amount that we can have designated.
Sure.
So anyway, that's the first step. And so then the next step would be that a developer would apply for TIF financing, and they would provide the costs that they want to, you know, have eligible. Now, in general, with the standard type of TIF, it's for site acquisition, design, and then infrastructure is really what it's designed for. So like on the project that we were talking about up north, the eligible costs that were submitted by the Chamber DevCo were for the purchase of the site, for the engineering, and then for the installation of streets, the running of power and of gas, and putting in the sewer, the water drainage.
Essential utilities,
which would then become public infrastructure as it's dedicated to the community. So basically what the developer does, so let's take the case of that North property, they filled out the application, paid the application fee, and then they start the process of having the CRA and the Planning Commission review it. Well, how it works is if it's approved, they don't get any money from the community. All they really walk out of City Hall with is a piece of paper. That piece of paper is a bond, and that bond entitles them to the amount that they applied for if it was approved, plus the interest on that bond. And the way that that bond gets paid, it only gets paid through one source, and that's through the increase of property taxes on that property. So, for example, on the project that we talked about last week at the City Council, the Chamber DevCo applied, and I think it was about somewhere around $1.8 million or $1.9 million. It's just a little under, let's call it $2 million and round it off at $2 million that they applied for. And so when it was approved, they really walk out of City Hall with nothing more than that piece of paper. So they're not taking any money from our taxing authorities. They're not taking anything from our current property base. They're walking away with that piece of paper for that set amount, and then it also has an interest rate on it. So just like a bond. So imagine your grandma gave you a savings bond mm-hmm. when you were a little kid, and that bond maybe said $25 on it, and then it also had an interest. It got interest on it. Well, that's the same type of bond as what the city council is okay. getting. The difference is that the only thing that pays that bond is the growth of real estate taxes on that property.
Sure.
So then what happens is, as homes get built and those lots get developed, the overall tax increment is going to grow, which means that today there's zero taxes on that site. Well, once the streets are installed, let's just say then, I'm just kind of guessing a number, but let's say at that point those lots are worth $500,000. Okay, so at that point the taxes would go up on that area, and so then when the taxes are being paid, it would get refunded to the Chamber DevCo, and that starts to pay on that bond until it's paid in full. Then when the houses get built, the same thing occurs. So let's say a house that's built that has a $200,000 tax assessment value, well, that house is going to generate about $4,000 a year in taxes. Those taxes then are going to get rebated back to the Chamber Development Corporation until that bond is paid in full. So then how this all works is what the Chamber Development Corporation does in this case is they have two choices. One, they can go out and get a loan against the TIF bond and set that loan up so when the tax payments come in later, they retire that loan, and that's how they get their cash up front to use for the project. And they can work with a bank. Like, I think the discussion with the chamber has been to work through a collective banking group in town as kind of a community effort.
Okay.
The other option they have is they could sell the TIF bond. Now, a TIF bond isn't sellable until the structures are built. Because who would buy a TIF bond if you don't know if the stuff's going to be built, because you don't know the taxes are actually going to come like they're supposed to,
yep.
right? So once the structures are built, then the chamber could sell that bond and probably get approximately the face value of it at that point, no different than a savings bond.
Sure.
You could sell a savings bond to somebody along the way and get its value at that point in time. And so, again, all they come out of City Hall with is that piece of paper that says you're entitled to be repaid this certain amount of money plus accruing interest, and that money only comes from the real estate taxes from that particular property. And so that's the beauty of it, is by creating something out of nothing. If that project never happened, those taxes would never occur. And so all you're really doing is rebating the taxes for a certain period of time to help pay for the installation of that infrastructure. Now, under the law, the TIF bonds can go out to 15 years for any individual parcel of real estate. But in North Platte, if you look at the history, most of our bonds have paid off in like 8 to 13 years. So they've always paid off quicker. And that means that once those bonds are paid, that tax money comes right back into our taxing authorities. And so it's a wonderful tool to finance. Now, so if somebody asks me then, well, why would anybody be against TIF? There's really just a couple reasons. One is that if you think the community grants TIF financing to projects that were going to happen anyways, then that would cost the taxpayers money. And mm-hmm. so that's why the CRA, Planning Commission, the City Council have to be extremely diligent understanding the finances of projects. For example, this project that's up north that the Chamber was doing, without TIF financing, those lots would have cost in excess of $50,000 a piece to develop and would have had to sell for probably $65,000 to $75,000 per lot to make it feasible. Well, you can't build an affordable home in that area with a $75,000 lot. It's not going to work. So therefore, that project was completely incapable of being financed without the assistance of TIF, because
and that's extremely key when we talk about TIF, is would this project happen without tax increment financing? And I think of a recent example in our history, Councilman Lucas, is with the mall project. The mall guys, Justin and Mike, asked for tax increment financing, and I think they were asked in one of the public hearings, what would this look like without TIF? We'd have, you know, maybe a little bit new paint on the mall, but it wouldn't be what it is today. So you have to ask that question, what would happen without TIF? Is this possible without TIF? And with this housing development, it really wasn't.
No, this project up north, there's no way it would have happened. And I think there's some projects that may have happened in some form without
sure,
TIF.
Maybe but a portion of
like
it.
Like the mall maybe is a good example. Yeah, they probably would have put a new coat of paint on it and put some lipstick on it. But to do the great project with the enhancements to our tax base and community, there's no way they could have done it without TIF. And, you know, up north, this project wouldn't have, I mean, they wouldn't have even bought the site and done anything without TIF.
It'd be impossible.
Yeah. And I've had people criticize me. I was the one lone voter who voted in favor of designating the area west of Lakeview mm-hmm. as a blight and substandard area, because Wilk Builders had indicated that they were going to apply for TIF. And he later we ended up not moving forward. The council didn't vote in favor of it. I was the lone voter that voted in favor of it. I still think I made the right decision, because of if you look at how difficult it has been. To give you an example, there was a house out there that was recently built that was very similar. It had to sell for $75,000 or almost 30% more than a house on an un-TIF lot. And so, I mean, that fortunately, the market has allowed them to continue to build out there. But by not TIFing that, it was made a lot more difficult. And I still think that the project would be moving faster and would have been better for our market if we would have just simply provided a conservative TIF bond to help with that infrastructure. And so that's the big debate with TIF.
Now, Councilman Lucas, when we look at this project specifically that the Chamber and Development Corporation has really agreed to tackle, the other controversy around this is the fact that this is city land. And some individuals are concerned about the expansion of the cemetery. And this is a very adequate concern that I felt was addressed very, very well. And we had great information presented by the city. And Mr. Grossa, too, with Public Works and our acting city administrator, did a great job at breaking down how we can use this land for housing, which it's been designated for by a previous planning commission that I believe you served on at the time.
Yeah,
and
I was.
We can still keep things going to the cemetery and still have enough space for our deceased.
Well, in my opinion, this was good government decision-making at its best, because The Chamber Development Corporation had obviously done quite a bit of research. They had speculated that there was excess land there versus what the cemetery was going to need longer term. And then they really liked that area because, first of all, it was already designated blight and substandard, mm-hmm. so they wouldn't have had to gone through that designation process, which big is step hurdle. One, which is a big hurdle. Also, there hadn't been as much new housing development up in that area, and there hadn't been as many people talking about developing that area. So the thought was you could go up there and not disturb natural development that was occurring otherwise. Plus, Rodeo Road has been in a rejuvenation mode lately mm-hmm. with the project that the church did there right at Adams and near Rodeo Road. And so this kind of complemented some of those things. And, you know, River's Edge has been continuing to enhance their golf course and their offering. And so it just seemed like a very natural fit. So then there were some concerns. One concern we heard was that there was concerns that that property had been purchased in a way that it was specifically only to be used for cemetery. Well, we did a lot of research on that, looked at the titles, and some history is that back in 1917, that property was part of, or that area was part of a cemetery association, which was then deeded to the city of North Platte. So at that point in time, there were cemetery associations across the state that were becoming part of cities, so cities were doing that type of thing to give themselves that long-term vehicle to take care of them. The other interesting thing is, did you know that the school system and the city traded land?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, well, we learned that too in our research, and I think that was in the 50s.
Okay.
No, I think it was 1960. Ironically, believe it or not, the night that we had our council meeting the other night was the 42nd anniversary of the council meeting where the property swap was approved.
How ironic.
Yeah.
Awfully cool, too.
Yeah, I think, no, was it 62 years, not 42, 62. Yes, 62.
From the 60s, yeah.
Yeah, it was from the 60s, so I'm sorry. But it was an anniversary, which was ironic. And so actually the city had land, I think, where Madison School is, and the school district had land along the golf course, and they swapped land back in the day. They swapped like roughly 5 acres for roughly 7 acres. So we had done research on all of that. The next big concern, which was, are we going to run out of room in the cemetery, and are we going to put an undue burden on the taxpayers in the future because we have to go, you know, buy expensive land at mm-hmm. that point in time to grow the, and that's a fair concern. And I also know Councilman Woods was really concerned about the fact that right now we have a lot of veterans passing away, so there's more use of the Fort McPherson mm-hmm. Facility, and that as we move out of that wave, that there's going to be more demand for the cemetery. Okay. So, as you said, Lane Grosseth, our city manager, he did extensive analysis of what our burial activities are like, the use of the cemetery. We also recognize that there's actually 24 other cemeteries in Lincoln County.
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
I didn't know there was that many. I knew that we had some great ones and some good expansion at Floral Lawn south of town, but to learn that we had 24 other ones, wow.
Yeah, I thought it was maybe 10, so
yeah.
I was surprised by that too. So he did significant research, and he projected that the minimum amount of area we have available is like 150 years, and it could be as much as 350 years, and that includes the roughly 3 acres we have available in the current cemetery, plus the eight-plus buildable acres that are south of the creek and northwest of the current cemetery.
Okay.
So the land that the Chamber DevCo is purchasing is north of the creek, up by the radio tower.
Yes.
And the area south of the creek will be held as expansion. I also ran some math to think about, okay, if we just sat on this land and thought to ourselves, you know, we don't want to take the risk of ever running out of land. I tried to bring to math because, you know, I like math.
Yep.
You know, I think you can solve a lot of questions with math. and so I ran some math to think, okay, what would the cost of the city be? And if it took us 100 years to need that land, that I calculated could be over $60 million in lost real estate tax revenue.
Wow.
And then if you took that number and put it in today's dollars, it was around $6 million. And so
what
that meant was you'd have to take $6 million today and invest it to make up for the real estate tax over the next 100 years that could be lost by not doing something with that project. And so once you brought math to it and the job that the city did analyzing it, I felt extremely comfortable that it was a prudent decision to use that north part. Now, I would not have been in support of doing anything with the south part of the from the creek.
Sure.
I really truly think the city needs to hold that land for future expansion.
Absolutely. And one big thing too, and this is exactly why the Chamber Development Corporation is entitled to attack this, Councilman Lucas, is the fact that this addresses our biggest concern here locally and throughout the region, and that's the need for housing and affordable housing. It is just, it's brutal right now, and this is our biggest need, and this doesn't solve the problem, but it's a great step.
Well, it's just a dent. You know, per my calculations, we need roughly 1,000 home units to be, additional ones to be built. Versus, if you take everything we have today and you add the housing we need to get back up to a normal supply, plus the anticipated growth, plus the new employers that are in the process of coming to North Platte, we need about 1,000 new home units in the next, I'd say, 4 years, 4 to 5 years. This is 5% of that at roughly 50. So this is truly a dent. Now, I'll tell you what's exciting to me about this is that our community just took a very big step in opening our arms to the world and saying, we want to work with housing developers.
It changes the reputation throughout the state and the Midwest.
It does, and we need to change that because right now we've been seen as the community that's got a housing problem, is going to have great future growth and future housing demand, but we haven't got to the point yet of working with the developers the way other communities do with the use of TIF financing and other tools to help them be successful. And so people keep asking me, they're like, well, Ty, why won't the pre-market or the free market, excuse me, take care of this? And the answer is that the free market in Nebraska allows the use of TIF financing and other tools in their community.
Sure.
Any developer can apply for it, and any project can apply for it if they meet the qualifications. And so I want to run through some numbers of why I think this is happening and why it's so important. And I hope it doesn't last forever, because it would be nice for the market just to work without as much government involvement.
Absolutely.
But right now, if you were going to go, like, say I was going to go buy some land on the west edge of town or on the south part of town and do a housing subdivision, first of all, I've got to buy the land, then I've got to install the streets. I would probably have $60,000 per lot in development costs. And then if I was a developer and I was trying to make a profit and I needed to pay for taxes and insurance and interest if I had a loan until they're sold, realistically, I'm talking about a minimum price of probably $70,000 to $80,000 per lot.
And that's on the conservative side too, right?
That's conservative. Yeah. That would be as much as $100,000 on bigger lots.
Wow.
Okay. Well, historically in North Platte, up until a couple years ago, you could buy a good lot for $20,000 to $50,000. Okay. When I bought my lot to build a house on, I paid approximately $35,000 for my lot 8 years ago. Well, my lot today would be over double to develop that lot. Okay. Then you compound that by the construction cost increases that have occurred. So I'll give you an example that I brought up earlier. A house that sold in southwest North Platte for $275,000 to $300,000 in the past, let's say even just a year and a half ago, today would be in the mid-300s. It's seen, wow, as much as a 30% price increase on new construction. Well, then if you go throw another $30,000 or $40,000 for lot development on it, all of a sudden you are on a new construction home that was maybe around $250,000. All of a sudden is in excess of $350,000, or is as much as a 40 to 50% increase. The rest of the market is not catching up with that much differential. So our market has come up, but it has not come up to the point where it can take on that significant of a cost differential. So what we're trying to accomplish with TIF is if we can come in and help a lot maybe move from $70,000 or $80,000 in cost back down to maybe $10,000 or $20,000 in cost. Well, we have just plugged a $50,000 to $60,000 incentive into that home, which should help a home that would be $350,000 or $375,000 getting it back down below $300,000. Because these are very expensive homes we're, yeah, talking about, because they're in new construction. And so really this use of TIF is trying to solve this conundrum we have that the costs have increased so much that the market can just cannot take those on and have new construction. Plus, other communities in the state are using this to finance public infrastructure, and so if we're not using it, we're not competitive.
Now, Councilman Lucas, is there anything else on this topic you'd like to add today, sir?
No, it's just that I want people to really look into this and to keep learning about it, understanding it, asking questions, talking about it, because I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this every couple months. I would project that we are going to be looking at a TIF request for residential home subdivisions probably once a quarter for the next, hopefully for the next couple years, until we can get ourselves to the point where this housing thing is corrected. I don't see another good way of doing it at this point.
Now, Councilman Lucas, I have a strong feeling that the dust is going to settle on this conversation a little bit, and we're going to move into the month of July after Nebraska Land Days, of course, and the conversation on our wonderful rec center proposal is going to really start to fire up. This is some exciting conversation that obviously you know very much about, being on the city council, being a citizen of North Platte, but also you hosted Megan and Leland a couple weeks ago on your podcast. They're the chairs of the committee that really has done the research in regards to this, and we're going to learn some more about this exciting project, I believe, next month at a city council work session.
Yes, I'm very excited for this to continue because this is a huge item for our community. And the podcast you referenced, you can go to the Nebraska Land Bank website or any of the podcast venues and just search our bank name and you can find this. It's a recent podcast, but they really talk in depth about the project, and it was a fun interview to be a part of. But the committee has been working on this for years. They've had assistance with surveying and design, and they've really come forth not with their vision, but what they feel is this community's vision for this project. They have taken information from many, many sources, brought it all together and assembled it, and have brought forth what I think is a very viable and strong recommendation. The funding source recommended with that is the use of the additional half cent sales tax. So if you go back a couple years ago, this came up for the voters, and the voters of North Platte were asked if they wanted this sales tax. At that point in time, it was designated loosely part for recreation and part for infrastructure, but it didn't have specific project parameters with it, and I think it lost somewhere around 60-40% roughly, but there was a big vote against it at that time because nobody wants to pay an additional half cent of sales tax. This time, what's different is this is a very well-defined project. They are also recommending that the management be turned over to a YMCA. There's a number of reasons for that we can talk about at a future time, but the recommendation has the project drawn up in a much more specific and conceptual sense and has a management and has a financing recommendation. And so now the city council's job is to scrub this recommendation and determine if it goes to the ballot in November. If it goes through the city council process, it would then go to the ballot and the voters would ultimately decide on the sales tax increase of 0.5%. In other words, 50 cents for every $100 spent for the financing of this project. And so, yes, this is going to be the big topic. You're going to have a lot to talk about.
I'm excited, Councilman Lucas. I really am. And this is an exciting project. And I want to add, too, as we talk about it, this is not a tax that would be forever. It would sunset when the bond is paid off.
Yes, and it's just not the rec center. It's kind of a whole recreational package because it includes a major overhaul of the Cody Pool, and it also includes funding for a new skate park that would be relocated. So, yeah, it's a total package deal. And like you said, once the bonds are paid off, then the tax would go away. I am very excited about this. I'm very supportive of this, and I think the voters should make this decision, but we've got to go through some steps with the city council first.
I couldn't agree more. This is democracy at its finest, Councilman.
It is, and things are getting done the right way at the city of North Platte.
Sure.
I mean, we don't agree on everything at the council level, but we do all agree that things need to be done in a transparent manner with lots of public input. And we want people to care. We want people to tune into those meetings if they can't attend personally and use the great YouTube feeds that are out there now that are very clear and you can hear them usually pretty well. And we want people to be involved because this is our city. It's not our city council city. This is our city. All of us that live here and around it. And we need to make these decisions together.
Absolutely. Now, Councilman Lucas, if there's any of your Ward 2 constituents or anybody in the city of North Platte that wants to get in contact with you as an elected official, how can they do so, sir?
Well, they can always give me a call, 520-2254, or people call the Nebraska Land Bank a lot, and they know how to track me down there, too. But people are welcome to call me, and I can't always take their call at the time they call me, but I always return them.
Absolutely. And if there's something big coming up before the council meeting, too, I know from experience as a Ward 2 constituent of yours, you might not be able to respond to an email before the council meeting, but you will read it and it will go into play at the council meeting and you'll be able to respond when time allows.
Oh, absolutely. And I try to put weekly content up on my Ty Lucas for City Council Facebook page. And so if you're not following that, I try to put up weekly content about the issues that are important to me that are going on at the City Council.
And you're very active, too, in responding to comments. So folks could have some dialogue with you there as well, Ty.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to learn how all the... I'm not the best at maneuvering Facebook, but I'm getting a little better all the time. And I love it when people put comments or concerns or questions, and then I'll respond to them. And then sometimes two or three other people will respond, and we'll have a great little discussion.
It's wonderful.
That, you know, people can see and be part of.
Well, Councilman Lucas, as always, we appreciate the time and appreciate the great work that you and your colleagues are doing here for the City of North Platte. Always good to see you, my friend.
Well, thank you for the great work you guys are doing, too.